When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to part two of Couch Potato Diary. Today, it's a Fightin' Friday, and it is a big one. We have WWE Backlash, UFC 301, and Canelo Alvarez preview coming up on the show today. We're going to run through all of that stuff here on the program. So thank you guys for tuning in, but we're going to jump right to it. We'll go chronologically. We'll start with WWE Backlash. So, WWE is in Lyon, France. We are taping this before SmackDown tonight, although I think SmackDown's taping kind of right now. So, we'll see. But as of right now, we know of five matches that are going to be on this show, so we're going to run through them. We'll start at the bottom and work our way up. It is Randy Orton and Kevin Owens against the Bloodline. And our Team RKO, it does seem like a really interesting grouping here, and we will probably get the eventual split off between these two of Randy Orton and Kevin Owens and get a absolutely all-timer type of a feud between these two. But for right now, I think this is a really interesting setup with them and the Bloodline. There is no part of me that thinks the Bloodline actually lose this match. I do think that we get a strong performance from both sides, but these are two performers in Randy Orton and Kevin Owens who I think can get the most out of Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa, and I think they are both performers who can help out in a big time way in getting these particular groups over. And yeah, looking at the odds, which yes, there are odds, looking at the odds right now, it is -1250 that the Bloodline ends up getting a win here. And I guess the only way that that could really be kind of thrown off is if we get like the outside interference that everyone is expecting, if that ends up costing them this match. I don't think that will be the case, but I think Jacob Fatu comes in, joins the Bloodline, and you have this Bloodline 2.0 that everyone can get really, really, really excited about. So I think Randy Orton and Kevin Owens are the perfect performers to kind of mesh styles with what Solo Sikoa and with Tama Tonga are able to do. I hope this is a showcase for both. I hope this is an incredible match. Like, I think that these four can put together a really interesting bout, and then Jacob Fatu shows up and is the next member of the Bloodline, and you get a real kind of sense of what 2.0 for this Bloodline group is going to look like. Up next, it is the Kabuki Warriors against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill for the Women's Tag Team Championships. I think Bianca and Jade end up coming away with the victory here. I think that works on a number of levels. A, it establishes Jade and Bianca as a star team right away. It adds to the depth of this tag team division that this isn't just a thrown together team and then they go their separate waves. This is a tag team division that needs some star power right now. And having a Bianca and Jade against Kabuki Warriors feud at the top of this tag team division will allow you to build up some of the other groups, the Chance and Carter, the Hartwell and Candice LeRae, the Piper Niven and Chelsea Green, maybe establish a couple more teams, because that was not an inspiring list to go through, but it gives you a bit of star power and a bit of legitimacy to these titles. Honestly, have these two teams feud through SummerSlam. That is where I think these four can really go. Add some legitimacy to that, but also I think it helps add some star power to Raw, who didn't get a ton of it that is active right now in that draft, right? Seth Rollins is going to be out for a while. CM Punk's going to be out for a while. Drew McIntyre is going to be hanging around. You got Sheamus as well. Like, there are some pieces you can build around on Raw for sure. But I think being able to have Bianca and Jade every week on your Raw program is going to help raise the star power on that show. And it helps raise the star power as well of Jade Cargill, as she gets to be on both shows. She gets a little bit more experience, gets to work with a whole lot of talent, and gets to grow her game that way. So I just think every sign points towards Bianca and Jade coming away with victories in the Women's Tag Team Championship match and being able to put them on both brands. But I think this is going to be a fun match. Up next, it is Bayley against Naomi against Tiffany Stratton for the, this one's the WWE Women's Championship. The world is on Raw. The WWE is over on SmackDown. I would be stunned if we take the title off of Bayley here. She is just getting started in her reign. Now, this is different than Cody and Damian Priest, where, like, they, for their characters, they need good long runs with these titles now. Bayley's kind of set. If this is just a transitional champion, so to speak, and it goes to a Tiffany Stratton, that honestly, genuinely wouldn't break my heart. I think Tiffany Stratton is, like, the next big thing in the women's division in the WWE. She has a look that is obviously appealing to many. She is incredibly athletic in that ring. The character stuff does, I think, need a bit of ironing out a little bit. There is a little bit too much of acting class in 2000 about some of the stuff that she does, but there is a character there, and there is an, like, she can get away with it because there is an obvious natural charisma to her, and so, like, there is absolute star potential written all over her. If you wanted to get her a women's championship win here, and you don't want to just beat her like a drum over the next couple of weeks, I could see Tiffany Stratton coming away with a win here in a bit of an upset, and WWE going that way. But I think the logical move is Bayley picking up a win over Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Then we get into the two main title fights, as it is Damian Priest going up against Jey Uso for the World Heavyweight Championship. I think these are going to be two performers who go out there with the goal of stealing the show. Jey Uso has had two marquee solo matches in his career, and neither of them have been that great. The one with Roman was pretty good, actually. But the one at WrestleMania with Jimmy Uso was a letdown. And family members were on their phone while the match was going on, which is not a great look. I think these are going to be two performers who want to go out there and steal the show. Like, for Damian Priest, he wants to show that he can be a main event caliber worker. And he has felt like a big star on this show since he won the title. Like, he carrying himself as the leader of the Judgment Day has made him feel like a really big deal. And so, like, you could tell me Priest comes out and in 30 seconds just squashes Jey Uso. That would be a bit of a surprise. But I think these two put on an absolute banger. Celebrating the one-year anniversary of Damian Priest really feeling like the next big thing in WWE after his performance in the street fight against Bad Bunny back in Puerto Rico at Backlash. But Priest retains in this one, but I think it's going to be fun. And then in the undisputed WWE Championship bout, it is Cody Rhodes going up against the phenomenal one, AJ Styles. This is one where it would be the shocker of all shocks if Cody Rhodes doesn't come away with a victory. He just finished the story. He is the face of this company now. It would be more than mildly surprising if he were to lose to AJ Styles. But I think this is another one where both these guys are going to put on a main event caliber type of a performance. I think this crowd is going to be really hot. I think there's going to be a lot of excitement for this. I think the crowd is going to be one of the biggest stars of this show. And I think this is a match where they're going to really be able to get that going. And so we've gone through all five of these, and all of them feel very one-sided. And yeah, looking at the betting odds right now, which again, it's hilarious that there are those things for WWE, but looking at the betting odds right now, it's the Bloodline, -1250. It's Cody Rhodes, -5,000. It's Bayley, -1,000. It's Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, -2,000. It's Damian Priest, -2,500. Those are long odds. People are not, there isn't a real, oh my God, what way are they going to go? So even the surprise, everyone is anticipating just happening. So it is going to be up to these performers to be able to put on great matches that have us believing the underdog, whoever it is, can come away with a win. Just that, we've talked about it a lot. Just give me one false finish that I'm buying. And maybe a surprise or two. Like, this does feel like a pay-per-view that has the opportunity to, while you don't necessarily love doing it as a pay-per-view, but it's PLE, has the opportunity to set a few things up now going forward. We've kind of had this lull between WrestleMania and this, trying to get into it, but now let's really get things geared up for the first part of the new year in the WWE. Okay, that is the wrestling preview. Let's move on and talk about UFC 301 going down this weekend in Brazil. UFC 301 goes down this weekend, and in the main event, it is for the flyweight championship, Alexander Pantoja going up against Steve Ersig. This is not a card that is overwhelmed with star power, that is for sure. But still a couple of fun fights on this one. We have talked before about a couple of undercard fighters who we are excited about, and I made a mistake on that particular episode of, like, who are we really excited for? I forgot to list Vince from Hell Pagel, who just always needs to be in the fighters to watch on this card segment. So on the undercard, we're not going to go through the undercard fights. Vince Pichel is fighting Ishmael Bonfim in the lightweight bout on the early prelims on ESPN2 and ESPN+. Dracar Close against Joaquim Silva, also in the prelims. And Karolina Kovačević is back on the prelims as well. Now, let's get into the main card. Also, there was one fight that fell through. A featherweight fight between Jean Silva and William Gomes was scheduled for this event. However, that belt was canceled due to health concerns after a weight cut for Gomes, who looked awful coming off of the scale. He weighed 3 pounds under and just looked like he was about to pass out. So definitely the right move made there. The pay-per-view kicks off with Paul Craig against Chao Barallo in the middleweight division. Craig is 36 years old, born in Airdrie, Scotland. For Alberta viewers, you'll get that one. He trains at higher levels, martial arts, 17-7-1 for the career, 4 wins by knockout, 13 by submission, 4 losses by knockout, 2 by submission, including his last fight against Brendan Allen at the Ultimate Fight Night in November of 2023. He has lost 3 of his last 4, finished in 2 of those. The losses coming against Allen, and then a couple pretty good fighters in there, in Johnny Walker and Volkan Ozdemir. He has wins over Nikita Krylov and Shogun Hua, along with Jamal Hill. 8 performance of the night bonuses is the second most in UFC history. I tend to not do performance bonuses as a stat, but that's lots. And like we said there, almost historic. He's been in the UFC since 2016, 9-7-1 in the promotion. And this is someone who has his hands in a lot of cookie jars. I will say that. Former Bama light heavyweight champion, has been a pro since 2013. He's a BJJ black belt. He's 1-0 as a kickboxer. He played soccer before MMA and still coaches it as a teacher at an educational facility. He hosts a podcast, and he's a former tag team champion in Insane Championship Wrestling, known as ICW. So my man has been around. Taking on Barallo, who is 31 years old, born in Brazil, training at the amazingly named Fight Nerds. He is 15-1 with 1 no contest, 4 wins by knockout, 4 by submission, and the lone loss coming by way of decision. His last win, his last fight, back in November of 2023, a unanimous decision win over Abbas Magomedov. He is 4-0 in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, 3 of those requiring the judges' scorecards, and 1 of them required a tap out. He had 2 fights on Dana White's Contender Series. He has fought at welterweight, middleweight, and light heavyweight. His loss came in his second career bout. So that's a lot of winning that he has done. He was 1-1, then he lost, and now he's rattled off 14 wins in a row. The BJJ black belt and Muay Thai black belt has been a pro since 2014. I tend to favor Craig in this bout, just looking at the experience advantage that he has. This is not someone who is one of in the upper echelon, anyway, with all due respect, in the Ultimate Fighting Championship right now. But this is still someone who has been through it and still someone who can really bring it. But he is plus 487 right now against Barallo. There is a lot of people excited about this kid. 15-1, 14 wins in a row, 4-0 in the UFC. He has been a buzzsaw. So look, I think Craig legitimately is a live dog in this spot at plus 487. I think the hometown favorite part of this really does kind of come into play here. And people are really writing off Paul Craig. But I think Craig might still have a little bit something left as that veteran savvy. But I might be, you know, just in going over this and seeing the odds so great. So, you know what? I might be overthinking this a little bit. Barallo is on quite a tear. So the official prediction is going to be Barallo to win this one by decision. Do we have fight props in this one just yet? We don't have that. Let me go to a different site and see if we can find that. But this is an interesting test for Barallo to see, like, how do you handle a veteran of the octagon? Because this will probably be one of the better fighters. This will be probably the best fighter that he has faced up to this point. Why am I not getting UFC 301 odds here? That's a little bit interesting. Anyway, it doesn't look like it's going to work, so let's just move on here. But yeah, Barallo by decision is the way I'm going to go. I initial thought was favoring the underdog a little bit too much, but I do think that is an interesting underdog play at plus 47. Worth, as we say in these parts, a little sprinkle. Michel Pereira taking on Ihor Potiera. No way I said that right. In the middleweight division, Pereira is 30 years old, training in Brazil, born in Brazil, training at Overcome Academy. 30-11 with 2 no contests in his career. 11 wins by knockout, 8 by submission. He has been stopped twice, once by knockout, once by submission. He has also lost by DQ. Coming off of a submission win back at UFC 299, giving him back-to-back first-round finishes, he has won 7 in a row, finishing 3. He's been in the Ultimate Fighting Championship since 2019 with an 8-2 record, a pro since 2011. He is also a BJJ black belt and a karate black belt. Taking on Potiera, who is 27 years old, born in Kyiv, Ukraine, training at Standard Pro, 20-5 for the MMA career, 9 wins by knockout, 4 by submission, 4 lockout losses, and 1 decision loss. Coming off of a unanimous decision win back February 10th, 2024 at the Ultimate Fight Night card there. That was his first decision win since 2019. It ended a 2-fight losing streak where he was finished in both. He's 2-3 in the Ultimate Fighting Championship with a win over Shogun Hua in there. He is an alumni of the Dana White's Contender Series and a pro since 2015. The gambling odds on this one are rather long again, as Pereira is a minus 550 underdog. I think he gets the win here. I said before on the Fighters to Watch episode that we did, this is a fighter who has started to take things seriously. He came out with the dancing, came out with a lot of showy stuff, lost a couple fights in a row, has rededicated himself to the sport, I believe, and has come away with some big wins. So I do think that this is someone who is going to come out and put a real, real stamp on this one and come away, I think, with a victory in this bout. And I think he probably gets a stoppage here. So I am liking Michel Pereira to win this one. Over under round and a half is even at minus 161. So people are not anticipating this fight really doing a whole lot in terms of going the distance or anything like that. So there probably isn't a whole lot of value on this one. Pereira probably getting the victory here, in some spots even at minus 625. So Pereira gets a job done, and I think he gets it done by way of finish. That brings us to Anthony Smith against Vitor Petrino in the light heavyweight division. Smith is 35 years old, born in Corpus Christi, Texas, training at Factory X, 37-19 for his career, 20 wins by knockout, 14 by submission. He has been stopped 15 times in his career, 11 by knockout, 4 by submission. He was knocked out in his last bout at an Ultimate Fight Night card last year against Khalil Roundtree. He's lost 3 of his last 4, 2 by knockout. He hasn't finished an opponent since 2011. The former title challenger to the UFC's Light Heavyweight Championship is 5-5 since his loss to Jon Jones in that bout. He's been with the UFC since 2016. The analyst is 12-9 in 2 UFC stints. He's also fought in Bellator and Strikeforce and has been a pro since 2008. Taking on Petrino, 26 years old, born in Brazil, training at CM Systems, perfect 11-0 record, 7 wins by knockout, 1 by submission, a unanimous decision victory in his last bout a couple of months ago against Tyson Pedro in an Ultimate Fight Night card. He is obviously undefeated in the UFC, 4 wins, 2 by decision, 2 finishes. He's been in the promotion since 2023, so already his 5th fight in just over a year. This will be his UFC pay-per-view debut. He is an alumni of Dana White's Contender Series and a pro since 2019. I like Anthony Smith, just don't like him in this fight. I think he is here to be the WWE squash match type of a guy and the first big name on the mantle for Vitor Petrino. So that does not paint a very rosy picture here for Anthony Smith, who is, again, a sizable underdog in this fight at plus 440. Looking at different methods of victory or anything like that, You can get Petrino to win is minus 625. If you think it goes the distance, it's at plus 200. And like we said before, Petrino, he has two decisions and two finishes. So I'm not going to say it's a coin flip, but he has this has the opportunity anyway to go to a decision. Petrino by decision is plus 240. So honestly, a little bit more value there. If you think that Petrino is going to win, but not necessarily put Smith away, plus 240 as the method of victory being a decision is probably the way to go. And I think a pretty smart play for this particular fight. That brings us to the co-main event of the evening. It is Jonathan Martinez taking on Jose Aldo in the bantamweight division. Martinez is 30 years old, born in Los Angeles, training at Factory X and MTZ Fight Club, 19-4 for his career, 9 wins by knockout, 2 by submission. He has been knocked out once in his career and has a disqualification loss on the resume as well. His last bout was a knockout win over Adrian Yanez back at the Ultimate Fight Night in 2023. He has won 6 in a row, 2 by TKO, both by leg kick. He has wins over Cub Swanson and Saeed Nurmagomedov in the UFC since 2018. He is 10-3, made his debut for Canadian viewers in New Brunswick. This will be his first pay-per-view fight since February 2020 before the pandemic at UFC 247. He's been fighting in the Apex since 2021 and has been a pro since 2014. Jose Aldo, if you want more on this cat, we did a legacy look on him earlier this week. 37 years old, born in Brazil, training at Nova União. 31-8 for his MMA career, 17 wins by knockout, 1 by submission. He has lost 4 times by knockout, once by submission, and 3 times by decision, including UFC 278, his last bout in August of 2022, a decision loss to Merab Dvalishvili, which ended a 3-fight winning streak all by decision. He hasn't knocked an opponent out since 2019, although a couple of years of that you can explain away as he wasn't fighting. He's 13-7 in the UFC, been in the promotion since 2011, 8-0 in the WEC. He is a Hall of Famer, a 2-time UFC featherweight champion who has the most successful title defenses in UFC featherweight history at 7. The former WEC featherweight champion was the youngest champion in WEC history and has been a pro since 2004. Aldo is a slight underdog in this bout. Aldo is legitimately one of my favorite fighters of all time. That's why we did a legacy look on him. 2 years off is rough, man. At 37 years old, going up against Jonathan Martinez, who 30. So it's just saying like, oh, he's this young up and comer, but the dude is on a roll. And yes, Aldo is the biggest name he has ever fought before, but we have very clearly established that Aldo isn't Aldo necessarily. Now, maybe 2 years off helps heal some wounds and gets him back fresh. I just don't believe that necessarily. So I do think that this one goes the way of Jonathan Martinez, who is minus 141 to take this one by just no method of victory given. Sorry. For this fight to go the distance, it is minus 208 for the yes, plus 170 for the no. Martinez by decision is plus 135. So if you want Martinez, maybe a sprinkle on that one at plus 135. Martinez by submission is plus 1700. So who knows? But I do think that Martinez probably comes away with a win. And we'll go Martinez by decision as the official call. So we have a couple decision props on this one. And then we get to the main event of the evening. It is Alexander Pantoja taking on Steve Ursic in the flyweight division for the flyweight championship. Pantoja is 34 years old, born in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, training out of American Top Team, 27-5 with 8 wins by knockout, 10 by submission. All 5 of his losses have required the judges' scorecards. In his last bout, he defended his UFC flyweight championship in a win over Brandon Royval at UFC 296. He's won 5 in a row, a couple by submission, 3 by decision. The current UFC flyweight champion is 11-3 in the promotion that he has been with since 2017, and has been a pro since 2007. Ursic is 28 years old out of Perth, Australia, training at Wilkes MMA. He is 12-1 for his career, 2 wins by knockout, 6 by submission. He has 1 decision loss on the resume. His last fight was his last win, UFC Fight Night back in March of 2024, a knockout win over Matt Schnell. It was the first knockout win in the UFC and his first since 2019. He's won 11 in a row, the last 3 coming in the Ultimate Proving Ground. two decision wins and one win by knockout. He's been a pro since 2016. Ursig is absolutely a live underdog in this particular bout for sure, but I just don't think he is on the level of an Alexander Pantoja. Pantoja has established himself as the king of the flyweight division. Ursig could get there someday, but I just don't think he is good enough to beat Pantoja in this particular realm. The grappling exchanges, I think, will be really, really interesting between these two, but I think Pantoja gets the better of it on the feet. So I say Pantoja comes away with the victory in this bout. And taking a look at it right now, method of victory, Pantoja by knockout is plus 425, by submission is plus 265, and by decision is plus 285. Ursig to win it all is plus 155. Honestly, with, what was it, 10? Eight knockout wins for Pantoja. I think he has the pop to be able to do this by way of knockout. So it's intriguing. I'm not going to sprinkle it there. But I do think that Pantoja ends up getting the win here. Under 3.5 rounds is plus 125. That might be the play on this one. So that is your UFC 301 breakdown. This is not pay-per-view worthy, in my opinion, and I look forward to 302. Let's just say that. Okay, we have one more fight to break down, and it's a big one. It's in the world of boxing as Canelo Alvarez takes on Jaime Munguia. Our fight previews continue with Canelo Alvarez taking on Jaime Munguia on pay-per-view Saturday night from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. This is the main event bout. It is Canelo Alvarez, a 33 years old, born in Guadalajara, Mexico, coming into the ring with a ridiculous 62-2 career record with 30 wins by knockout. His last fight, a unanimous decision win over Jermell Charlo, September 30th, 2023. It is three straight wins, all by decision. He is the current reigning, defending WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, Ring Magazine, super middleweight champion of the world. He has not knocked down an opponent since 2021 with Caleb Plant. He is the former WBO light heavyweight champion, former WBA, WBC, Ring Magazine, and IBF middleweight champion. WBO, WBC, WBA, Ring Magazine, light middleweight champion. He's been a pro since 2005. If you're doing the math, yes, he was 15 years old at that point, and he wasted no time. We did a legacy look on him yesterday, and this was insane. Seven fights in 2006, seven fights in 2007, eight fights in 2008, seven in 2009, five in 2010, four in 2011. And then he kind of settled into this a couple times a year routine that he has fallen into. For the most part, it has been May and September that he has fought on Cinco de Mayo and then Mexican Independence Weekend. There have been a couple of times, due to some circumstances, that he has fought in November as well. But for the most part, it is Cinco de Mayo and then late in September for Mexican Independence Weekend. Taking on Jaime Munguia, 27 years old, also in Mexico, this time from Tijuana. He has yet to taste defeat. 43 fights, 43 wins, 34 knockouts. One of those knockouts came in his last bout early this year in a ninth round win over John Ryder. He has knocked out four of his last five opponents. The only one he didn't is Sergey Derevyanchenko. He hasn't fought in Vegas since 2018. He is the WBC silver super middleweight champion, former WBO intercontinental middleweight champion, and the former WBO light middleweight champion. He is a pro since 2013. This is going to be such an interesting fight because I think Munguia wants this to be a high pressure, high volume, wild fight. And Canelo Alvarez hasn't been in one of those in a really, really long time. And so if Munguia can dictate the pace, he has a real chance. And more importantly, if Munguia can dictate the distance, he has a chance. He is a longer fighter. And so if he is able to keep Canelo at range and keep that volume up and not let Canelo get inside, then I think Munguia has a really good chance of winning this fight. I just don't think he's going to be able to do it. I think Canelo, with him being so smart and one of the best ever at setting his punches up, I think, A, we're going to see a lot of countering from Canelo. And that has been where some of his fights have kind of fallen into that lull, is when he is waiting to counter. There's going to be no waiting against Mungia. Mungia is going to be foot on the gas pedal and let's go. And I think that's going to open him up to a few countering opportunities, and that's going to allow Canelo to get inside. Punch coming here from Mungia, Canelo can slip, get that first shot, and that allows him to carry himself inside and do the work that he wants to do. Mungia is really good and genuinely one of my favorite fighters to watch. Canelo has moved his way up as one of my favorite fighters just ever. With how he is able to set punches up, the power that he is able to throw while still keeping up a decent amount of volume when the time comes for that. Now, that killer instinct has not been there in a while. Like we said, he hasn't knocked an opponent out since 2021. I would be surprised if that came in this bout as well. I think that Canelo does come away with this win, but I do think it is another one that goes to a decision. But I think this is going to be kind of an all actions type of a fight for Canelo Alvarez. It's going to be so much fun. It really, really is. Taking a look at the odds, Canelo to win at all is minus 588. Over under 10 rounds, the over is at minus 22, so that doesn't help us out a lot. Fight to go the distance, yes, minus 200, so that doesn't help us out either. Alvarez by decision is minus 125, so that's probably our best bet. Plus 195, Canelo is to win by knockout. Might be worth it just because the guy hits so fucking hard. If you are thinking Mungia, you can just go plus 387 just for the win. Going over the resume, if you listen to the Legacy Look or watch that video, judges tend to favor Canelo Alvarez out in Vegas. We'll just say that. And I think to consider him winning by decision would be quite the feat. So I think if you are going Mungia, I think going plus 900 for him to knock Canelo out is the play. But I do think that Canelo wins this fight, and he wins it by decision in a really, really fun fight that probably, in my opinion, sets up a Benavidez fight. That's I think you have to do that. I know it is back-to-back fights against Mexican fighters, but I think you have to do that one. If you want to do it in the stadium in Guadalajara, again, by all means, it'll probably end up being in Vegas. But you could even do that one AT&T Stadium in Texas if you wanted, but Vegas tends to get these big ones. I think that is the fight you have to make. Just a couple other boxing notes before we go. Alvarez got into it this week with Oscar De La Hoya. Alvarez has absolutely entered his I don't give a fuck era when it comes to promoters or anything like that. He signed that 5-year, $365 million deal with DAZN. They're trying to recoup that money by way of pay-per-view now. And so he's set. He's good. So he has very much, he understands that he holds all of the cards when it comes to the promoters, and he has no problem telling some of them to go fuck themselves. And that's essentially what he did with Oscar De La Hoya, calling him a scam artist and a thief, essentially. And Oscar De La Hoya, there was one time where, like, he's coming off of this amazing boxing career, Hall of Fame boxing career, and now he's a promoter, and it's Golden Boy Promotions, and we're getting some good Golden Boy fights. Over the last couple of years, it does feel like that reputation has been damaged a little bit, and he has trouble keeping fighters, and it feels like a lot of promoters have kind of passed him by a little bit, and so he needs to get this back on track, because that it does seem like reputationally it has veered for Oscar De La Hoya. On that note, Ryan Garcia tests positive for steroids. Performance enhancers. This is incredibly frustrating that this kid cannot stay out of his own way. Everyone claiming, oh yeah, crazy like a fox after the win over Devin Haney last weekend. And I had said, like, all of his antics and then coming in overweight. It's like, if you're not taking this seriously, I'm not taking it seriously. I'm not buying the pay-per-view. I'm not buying another pay-per-view this kid's on. Unless we get, like, some drastic changes from how he has been presented. And people saying, like, oh, this is just going to make the rematch that much bigger. Well, I hope it makes it bigger on DAZN for free. Or on ESPN Boxing for free. Or at Amazon Prime along with my subscription. Because I'm not paying for another fight of this guy's. I didn't want to pay to watch him fight last time. I certainly don't want to pay to watch him again. I am so over it with this kid and with all of these different things that he has done. He is so talented. And that's the frustrating part. He is so talented, but just seems to kind of do so many things wrong around the sport. And look, there are guys who have done a lot worse things than Ryan Garcia. Absolutely. And I've obviously given Canelo a second chance for the positive test that he had. back in 2017. So, like, there is road to redemption for sure. But as of right now, I'm over it with this kid. All right, that is going to do it for Fightin' Friday here today. If you want NBA and NHL, that is on part one of this podcast, which is available wherever you get these shows. So you can find that, whether it's on podcast form, where I would like you to subscribe and leave a review. If it's on here on YouTube, make sure you leave a review. And, or not leave a review, you can't do that. Leave a comment, like and subscribe, and I will talk to all of you next week. We got a lot of family stuff going on here, so I don't think there's going to be any reaction shows on this coming up on throughout the weekend. And honestly, I'm going to be on Sportsnet 960 here in Calgary on Monday, so a lot of the reaction stuff might have to wait, honestly, until Tuesday. But there will be reactions to all of these as the week goes on. So, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I will talk to all of you later. I'm out.